Hey, everybody.
Hello, friends.
We have a couple of quick Art History Babes Nation updates for you.
What's going on over here in our world?
First off, we have a new featured artist.
Zach Clark. You might recognize him from some of our previous episodes, such as Carita Kent or Albrecht Dürer.
And our upcoming episode on Robert Rauschenberg as
Which
well.
Which is going to be great.
It's going to be
just
doozy.
As rambly and crazy as the first one. So we're officially blaming that on Zach.
Yeah. But you've maybe heard him before on the show. He's a friend of ours, and he's an artist, a printmaker, and he is our featured artist, and he has created a beautiful print set called Confabulation is a River in California, and it is available for purchase on the Art History Babes website. It's a really interesting print set and just a really interesting concept. And if you want to learn about it, learn about the story behind it, and learn about Zach and his process and his life as an artist, you can head over to our YouTube channel and watch our featured artist video.
Because we're on YouTube now, guys. We got quite a few videos already.
We're on YouTube. We're just expanding the content.
You can see our faces now.
Yeah.
Our faces are going to match our mouths. Watch the words come out.
It's pretty great.
It's cool.
It's a pretty cool thing. So we have a handful of videos up right now, and we're going to keep making them and keep churning them out for you guys. So be sure to check out the YouTube, subscribe and like and hit that little bell so you get notifications when we put content out there. But yeah, so just some fun, exciting things. What else is going on? Do we have other exciting things to talk about?
We're going to have new merch coming out soon.
Oh yeah, merch.
Summer merch is coming soon, which means spring merch is going to be going. So if there's anything that you've been thinking about getting and haven't pulled the trigger, now might be the time.
So head over to arthistorybabes.com, check out our merch, check out our featured artist, check out all of our stuff that we're working on for you lovely people and for you lovely patrons. Shout out to all of our patrons.
We love you so much.
patreon.com/arthistorybabes. You guys make it possible, so thank you. You're all amazing. And let's get to the show. Welcome to the podcast. I'm Corey.
I'm Jen.
I'm Natalie.
I'm Ginny, and we are the Art History Babes.
We're all together.
We're hanging out.
I'm really happy when the four of us get to convene. It's been harder over the last few months. So sometimes, dear listeners, you're listening to two or three of us. But you got the full package today.
Everyone is here. And it's a beautiful summer day, and we're drinking white wine.
It's a fucking hot wine. Summer day.
It is quite toasty. I am unaccustomed to this temperature.
Yeah, Ginny is coming to us.
It's an interesting
wine. Oh, you don't like the Vibel?
I've just been drinking.
It's a little bootery.
Yeah. Bootery? I haven't even tried mine. Buttery. For
it tastes
the,
like apple cider.
Layman.
Oh.
Really? Wait, okay. Now I have to taste it.
Oh, it is sweet.
Wow.
Oh.
It is sweet.
It's table wine.
So we've been having...
Table wine tends to be on the sweeter side.
Honestly, this is our second dud as far as wine goes. Earlier, we popped open a Chardonnay and it was not the business.
Yeah, Ange kind of warned me that the wine she was passing on, she was like, ah.
Yeah, so it's a really hot day. We're in the sort of Sacramento area of Northern California. For our listeners that aren't aware of what California is like in the summer, it's hot and it's dry.
Especially in the valley here.
I feel warm.
Dehydrated.
Yeah.
100% of the time.
Just constantly dehydrated.
Yeah. At all times, I am dehydrated.
But all you have to do is drive about 60 miles in western direction and suddenly it's really nice and cold and foggy.
Get a sea breeze.
Yeah, Ginny's coming to us from San Francisco. She's a queen that managed to find a really cool spot out
by
there.
By the skin of my teeth.
Yeah, so we're really proud of her. So
thank you.
Congratulations, Ginny. We're really stoked to go visit you and sleep in your house.
Me too.
We're going to be doing a kind of housewarming slash checking out some San Francisco art video for y'all. Yeah. So you'll get to see Ginny's dope new spot, too. Mm-hmm.
It was built in like 1910, 1907.
Wow. Ooh, I like that.
So there's, is it haunted?
I was just going to say, there's probably some ghosts.
What?
Have you saged it?
I did before construction went on, but I need to do it again after it's all done.
Right, because construction brings in the demons. We all know
As
that.
Everyone knows. It's when they all sneak in. Construction brings in the demons.
It just opens the portals.
Something about drywall, just the demons all flustered.
It's all the dust. Yeah. Like, the demons are just like, yes. Chaos.
Destruction.
Yeah, smash that shit. Well, new kitchen cabinets. Evil.
I can't wait to perform a seance.
Yeah, I was gonna say,
home.
Do you have a Ouija board? We could do some like Ouija.
No, but my mom does.
That could be fun.
I feel like we have to do an episode one day on talking boards. Like, that's a whole thing.
There's more than
talking boards.
Yes, the Ouija board is something that became like patented sometime in like the 1960s.
It's owned by like Mattel or something.
It is. It's like the Hasbro. I don't know.
Oh, totally.
But they're all fashion of different boards in which you can conjure up messages from the beyond.
It was all part of that spiritualism.
Mm-hmm. Victorian era spiritualism.
About the same time as the whole like tarot explosion and stuff.
Yeah.
So one of these days, we'll probably talk about that.
About the speaking boards.
Yes. And I can't wait to see what kind of demons are living in Ginny's house.
I bet Ginny can wait.
Yeah, Ginny's like, I'm good.
Like, I'm cool with, like, I feel like the kind of spirits of any spirit I attract to my life are friendly spinsters.
Aw. Yeah. You know what? That's rude. I shouldn't be calling them demons. They're just like the ghosts of lonely old cat ladies.
Right. Like, it's really interesting, too, because the apartment upstairs is the same layout as mine downstairs, but there's a little extra room in the front in the bay windows. And the room was called the fainting room for women when they had their corsets on and they'd come up the stairs. And it's like the first room when you come up the stairs.
So you can take a quick little pass out.
And so that, you know, like the men wouldn't see you when you were struggling for breath because that was unsightly.
Oh, my God.
There was a whole room for that, you guys.
Don't want to upset the men. And we're back to people wearing corsets.
You want to train your waist? Go do some Pilates or something. Like, you don't need to suffocate.
No. Yeah, definitely don't
do bind
that.
Yourself. Don't. You're already binded by society.
Wow. That's damn. Really, that's real.
I'm happy with that.
Oh my goodness.
Ginny endorses this message.
Yeah.
Binded by the love. Do, 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 do.
Revved up like a douche. I think it's deuce.
Deuce, but everyone thinks it's douche.
Another because runner in the night.
He says it like douche.
It sounds like douche.
But it is douche.
Like also, what's a deuce? Like a car?
Wrapped up like a deuce. I think it is a reference to a car.
Another runner in the night.
I think it is. I saw VH1 did like an expose.
Oh, an expose.
That's what they did. Like VH1 just goes in these weird like
true.
Weird stories from music history. Yeah. And I ate that shit up.
When the music changed on Behind the Music, you were like, oh no.
Oh my God.
Who OD'd?
Behind the Music was so good.
Yeah.
Well, we're talking about music today.
We
so
are.
That's fitting.
Oh, yeah. Wow. So many natural segues. Wow.
I'm really proud of us. Like,
we're getting really good at this guy.
Yeah. But yeah, today we're talking about music. Specifically, we are unpacking Ape Shit. So yeah, I feel like people that know that I studied art have come at me. And been like, what do you think about this video? And I'm like, oh boy.
Which has been really like, I mean, so first instinct is kind of where we'll start, but like first instinct I was like, I like lost my shit a little bit. I was like, oh my God.
Did you go ape shit?
I did. I was taken aback by it and I was very excited. But then like very quickly my mind went to like, oh, this is good because it makes people who aren't art historians want to reach out to their art historian friends.
That's
and like, it makes people want to think about these things. And that got me really excited. Yeah. I was like, everyone is watching this video. Yeah. It's got hundreds of millions of views. Yeah. And it's filmed in a way that makes you want to know more about the art and makes you want to appreciate it. And I was just like stoked on that from the beginning.
That's what got me excited. Like, I don't think that it's any sort of surprise to anyone who's been listening to us for a while that I'm not really like the biggest pop slash whatever is popular music right now. I'm like, yeah, Beyonce is cool. Yeah. I dig her, but I was really interested in what was going on with this video, especially because I was like, oh wow, this is a really cool moment where the mainstream is gonna give a shit about art history for like a second.
Sure.
So that is very cool for me as someone who has been trying to make what I studied for so long relevant to the world.
No, I agree. And I mean, I have a lot of respect for Beyonce, but I'm not like a huge Beyonce stan. Like, if I had to pick, I'd be like Solange all the way.
Right.
I just feel like artistically Solange makes more of an impact on me. However, I definitely think that Beyonce, especially in the last few years, has made like a lot of really conscious and introspective work that makes a lot of really important like political and cultural statements.
And the way she's interacted with visual material has been
certainly impressive.
Fabulous. Like, Natalie and I did a Patreon extra where we talked about Beyonce's Coachella performance.
Yes.
So you should run over there and listen to that, because she consciously used a lot of imagery, a lot of iconography that was very important to the performance. And the performance is amazing. And also, like, I've talked about it a few times. I've, since it came out, like, I'm still obsessed with Lemonade. Like, the visual album
was really amazing.
Was unreal. Like, and she has consciously, over the past few years, really shifted into trying to interact with different aspects of, like, her identity as a Black woman, and then, the, like, political things like the Black Lives Matter movement, and doing it in a way that crosses over with visual material in a very conscious way.
Yeah.
And in a way that is also aesthetically pleasing to watch. Yeah. Like, she, I think musically, her music and Solange's music are very different.
Mm-hmm.
And I love Beyonce's music. I really do. But it just definitely is more poppy. It's just definitely more mass appeal. Solange has a little bit just like chiller of a vibe and like, but yeah, Beyonce's kind of weaving together of all these different like heavy things involving culture and visual material is, I mean, I think it will forever be like an important form of this generation's art moving forward, you know? Like, I think people are going to be talking about videos like this and Lemonade far in the future. You know what I mean? I think she's just done a really good job of knowing what the people want, knowing what's going to sell, but making a statement with it and selling a message with it. And I think this video is just another great example of that.
Yeah, and we did that baby on Faith Ringgold and her work, and just to draw a parallel between art history and popular culture, Faith Ringgold has Dancing in the Louvre, which is a scene of women dancing in front of famous paintings at the Louvre, and now Beyonce's brought it right into like the center of popular culture. She's taken this idea of reclaiming this very sterilely kind of white place for the most part. I mean, we'll get to it, but the part in the video where it says my people and then it flashes to like slaves in paintings and like how darker skinned people basically take up background space in a lot of these paintings in the Louvre, and that's kind of the place that they've held for a long time. And so this reclaiming is just so powerful, and I hope people see that.
Faith Ringgold's work has been at the front of my mind because we recently saw, Natalie and I recently saw some of her work at the Crocker, and then we did a baby episode on her. And so it's just kind of like been at the front of my mind. And instantly I was like, oh shit. Like,
Beyonce's dancing in the Louvre.
And if you should go check out that baby episode as well, because it's all about Black women joyously dancing in the Louvre in front of the Mona Lisa. And I love that work. I think it's very compelling and very important. And
they're both doing the same thing in trying to work through and then represent what it means to be a Black woman in this country. Like, mm-hmm. and it's not just Blackness, it's being a Black woman and that identity and like everything that's wrapped up in that.
Mm-hmm. And being a Black woman in an artistic space.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what the video is all about. It's about, and it's what that video was about, and it's what Faith Ringgold's work mm-hmm. is about. People of color, women of color, taking up space in these institutions where they mm-hmm. haven't had space.
Yes.
And yeah, and doing so in a fucking badass way. Yeah. Yeah.
Powerful.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Were there any other like initial reactions to the video?
I mean, no. Because I think any... I don't know.
Nope.
I have, like, just random opinions about yeah. Beyonce and Jay-Z and what they've been up to the last couple of years. And so part of me, like, when I see a video like this is like, these guys, you know? But I think that that's just very, like, my own personal sort of annoyance with the Carter Empire. But... That's all I'm going to say about that.
Yeah. As someone who is very dumb when it comes to celebrities' lives and what's happening outside of their output, because right. I know nothing. I'm always the last to find out. I objectively just like the video with no context.
Which I think is great.
Yeah. Like, I know, and I know rumors and things like that, but I've never done enough investigation to know if anything I've ever heard holds weight. So, like, mm-hmm.
I think, I mean, this is me just being a sap, but I like the general, like, Beyonce released Lemonade, and it was this whole her processing Jay-Z being a kind of piece of shit.
Yeah.
And the different layers of her mm-hmm. processing that. I always love that about that album, because it's like she's mad, she's powerful, she's sad. You know, it had all the layers of that. Then Jay-Z released an album, which was him kind of dealing with those things.
Mm-hmm.
And then they released an album together that basically was like, we're working through this shit together.
Yeah.
And I thought that was pretty beautiful, just in terms of like being yeah. that open about yeah. the difficult things. Because, you know, like being a couple that is that at the forefront of everything, they basically leaned into
yeah
the things that were public about their relationship. And once again, me being a sap, I like that it returned to the, you know, the name of the album is Everything Is Love.
Yeah,
it's about them finding love again. It's about them working through their issues. It's about them deciding to be a strong yeah. unit.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
I think it's just my cynicism crops up. It's hard.
For sure.
I've been trying to kill my cynicism a little bit, because sometimes it's a lot. Sometimes
I know what you mean.
I know what you mean too.
Yeah. I feel similarly. And I think too, like, I personally, I'm an incredibly private person. So I always have a hard time understanding when artists like put their own very personal aspects of their life like into their work in such a public format. But then on the flip side of that coin, I know that a lot of times personal experience informs art. So yeah. that's well, of
and
course
on top of it, when you're that famous, there's no avoiding.
Exactly.
So it's almost like a way, or if I were to guess what Beyonce, because really she is the impetus behind this being a public
mm-hmm.
like expression of what happened, it's a way of reclaiming it, because people are going to find out no matter what. People are going to be talking. If he's cheating, it's out there. People are going to be saying it. So it's like, I'm going to take this back. This is mine. This is not yours. And now I'm going to process it. And then you're going to listen to it.
Which is commendable for sure.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, it's a big push and pull for me, in the sense that the cynical side of me is like, oh, sure, capitalize on your drama because you're already billionaires, so why not use it for content and get all kinds of exposure and video plays and whatever the hell. But then at the same time, I want to be a compassionate person and look at celebrities as these people who, yeah, they're wealthy, but they have definitely had to give up a part of themselves that we as like regular folk don't understand. Like, we don't understand what it would be like to live in that world where mm-hmm. everything you do is on TMZ.
And I've never bought into the idea, which a lot of people do, that
celebrities deserve whatever judgment and criticism they get they sign up for it. And it's like, no, a lot of these people are artists. Like a lot of these people are just creating what they love. And if they gain success, that doesn't mean that they wanted that. You can be an actor, an actress, a musician, an artist, and not want the celebrity, but it comes with it. Like success and celebrity are just synonymous in our society, and that's unfortunate. And it's sad, but
well, and so that's like what, you know, that's why I think just in my own development as a human, I'm trying to be a little bit more compassionate.
And we're all projecting our own shit onto this too, which is like the other part of it. Like we all see it through our own lens.
And like I often have this knee jerk reaction where, like I said, I think Beyonce deserves a lot of credit, but I think that there are many people that are just like Beyonce stans that like no matter what she does, everyone's just like, oh, have you seen it? It's amazing. It's like blah blah blah. So my reaction when I heard about Ape Shit before I watched it was like, okay, skepticism. Like let's hold on,
relax.
However, once I watched it, I have a lot more good things to say about it than critiques. And any critiques that I have, which I'm sure we'll get into at some point, are like very niche, nerdy art historical things.
Yes.
Yeah. They're not like your typical.
I think all of us deal on different levels and in different situations, deal with that same reaction, because I almost feel like that's what just being an academic does to you, is it's trying to make you super critical of everything all the time.
Yes. Especially things that everyone seems to like.
Right. Exactly. You have visceral reaction. Yeah. You're like, I don't like that.
You're like, we'll see. You're like taught to be a little cynical. Yes. And so I get it. I totally get the impulse to be cynical, and it definitely comes through sometimes. But yeah, I also, likewise, in my development as a human, I liked the way you phrased that, I have been more and more trying to focus back on the idea that they have insane wealth and all of this, but like that doesn't mean they shouldn't be allowed to make the art that they want to make.
Yeah,
and
they're still people.
Yeah, and just as artists, I don't think every move they make is like trying to make money. I think they love what they do. And I think they should be allowed to make the art that they want to make without everyone being like, oh, they're just trying to make money. At the same time, the whole Beyonce empire is complicated because of its interactions with capitalism. And that's something that is researched in academic circles. Yeah. Like, there's a lot of people that have problems with Beyonce's feminism. It's something I've spent a lot of time thinking about because of a class that I was a TA for, basically. We like worked through the different critiques of Beyonce, and you know, like bell hooks does not appreciate Beyonce's feminism, basically, and bell hooks is an incredibly important feminist voice, you know, and I appreciate bell hooks, but I kind of disagree with her because I do think Beyonce's feminism is powerful, albeit problematic in certain aspects because it's wrapped up in capitalism and sexuality sometimes. So it's like there's all sorts of elements like where, yes, you should be critical, but I think there's a difference between being critical and being a hater. That's what I was getting to.
Well, I wanted to ask,
which we know the difference very well when we get responses from our listeners sometimes. There's a big difference between people who are being thought-provoking and slightly critical and kind,
and then being a hater.
Mr. Hollywood.
And we listen to one version and we ignore the other.
because there's some people that I feel like with everything they just want to hate on everything all the time, and I just don't have the energy for that. Like I just don't.
Hold it. For our listeners, but also for myself, can you give us an example of how Beyonce's feminism is problematic?
Sure. Good question. So the main critique by bell hooks is basically the idea, it's a very famous quote, like you can't dismantle the master's house using the master's tools. So basically Beyonce for many years. You know, she was very, very much leaning into her performance as like a sexual object. That is something that is talked about, like leaning into her role as an object of mm-hmm. men's attention. Yeah. And then also the fact that she is insanely wealthy mm-hmm. and basic inequality 101, things like racism and sexism are all tied up into the capitalist yes. superstructure.
Right.
So it's basically like she is benefiting from that structure. Mm-hmm. And so in that sense, her feminism, some people argue, can be flawed.
Yeah.
So that is like a pretty common critique, and it's an important one, and it's one we should think about.
Yeah.
My personal belief is that she's also made feminism incredibly appealing and approachable for mm-hmm. a lot of people.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
that's
two sides of that coin.
Right.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. And it's interesting too, because my initial reaction to this music video was like, oh, it's just like kind of a display of wealth and success that they can rent out one of the most famous cultural institutions in the world.
Yeah,
just
yeah.
rented who else the Louvre. Could do it? Which I think was definitely a part of
oh,
it.
Oh, yeah.
But it goes a lot deeper than that. Yeah. And I think ultimately a lot of what I got from the music video was just like a way of showing that like, yes, they are very successful and they're very wealthy, but they have access to this space and to this art that like for centuries people of color didn't have.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That just I don't
Which
know.
Which is
why.
The bigger takeaway
I don't
than
know.
Their wealth.
Like that just kind of you're 100% right. That like kind of gave me chills a little bit. Like, cause that is exactly exactly what they are doing.
Yeah.
Cause yeah, they're 100% like, you know, the lyric, like, I can't believe we made it. Like it's all about being like, look at what we can do, but like, look at what we can do in this context.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, it is really important that you think about it that way, you
I
know?
I mean, the Louvre is like a symbol of colonialism.
Yeah.
Like,
exactly.
That right. is what it is.
Right.
And that's a lot the of, definition of reclaiming it is like, oh, we're going to rent that from you, France.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a lot of the art in it is symbols of conquest.
Yes.
And like a lot of the images that are shown in the video and are symbols of conquest.
Yes.
And like,
yes.
that is an incredibly powerful thing.
It is.
And criticisms about like the paintings that they chose to be in front of, like what would be a good choice of painting in the Louvre? Like that is the point. They're all symbols of like white colonialism all over the world and like in different time periods in different countries, but like that's kind of what the Louvre is showcasing. So they're not gonna go find a Faith Ringgold in the Louvre. That's the point. Mm-hmm. Like
can I share my little art historical critique of like what I maybe wish they had done?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, so you know, there's a couple flashes of scenes of her and Jay-Z in the ancient Egyptian wing where they're in front of a sphinx. I think so.
Yeah,
I think it's like head of some pharaoh, some guy. A pharaoh.
A pharaoh guy.
But what I would have This is like, I know this is so annoying. I feel annoying saying this.
You can't go back now.
I know, because I don't know how exactly you would visually convey it, with the exception of maybe doing more in like the ancient Egyptian wing or arts of Western Africa wings. But the reason that I'm more cognizant of it is because of her Coachella performance and referencing Nefertiti in such a huge way. I think that it would have been cool if they had done more shots in the ancient Egyptian wing, because the museums that have the largest collections of artifacts and art from ancient Egypt are like France, England, like very white Western colonial countries. So I think
also the ancient Egyptian wing in the Louvre is fucking
fantastic.
Amazing. Yeah. Like, it's so good. Yeah, I feel that. That would have been cool.
Yeah.
But...
You know,
but you're right. Also, a very nerdy critique.
Yes.
But that's okay. It's okay.
So, should we talk about some of the work?
Yeah, let's take a quick break, and then we'll get into kind of picking apart some of the main works that they chose to showcase and all that good stuff.
Yes.
Sounds good. Be right back.
We have returned,
and we're back.
We are talking about Beyonce's apeshit video. I know I should say the Carters, but I'm going to say Beyonce's.
Cause, it's Beyonce's.
Because it's Beyonce's. Let's be real. I mean, like, no, I kind of like Jay-Z, but it's Beyonce's.
You know Jay-Z would have never put on that, like, baby teal leisure suit if Beyonce hadn't been like, you're wearing it. He was like, all right.
We all have a lot of thoughts and feelings. Yeah, there's a lot of art that
so much
that we're gonna talk about in the video, and kind of, you know, our thoughts on what it means to be in this video, and obviously this is just kind of our interpretations of things. There's also been a lot written about the video already. Like, I feel like every art publication, like, blog immediately was I am writing a post about this.
Well, yeah, you know? I mean, we're in that same group. Mm-hmm. We would be, what's the word?
Remiss.
Like, remiss, yes. I almost said amiss, and I was like, no, that's not right.
Something is amiss.
I know. We would be remiss if we had
for sure
let this moment in pop culture go unnoticed by the art history babes.
Yeah.
Word.
Yeah. Also, I feel like I just want to put this out there because I just remembered it. We were talking during our break about just like Beyonce and art history and how she's been using it a lot, and it totally came back to my mind. I read an article like 6 months ago or whatever that apparently Beyonce's mom used to give like little art history lessons to Beyonce and Solange and Kelly when they were like younger.
What did
and
Beyonce's mom do?
I don't know.
Oh.
We'll ask her.
We'll write her. I don't. Like I said, this was like 6 months ago. I do not remember the details, but I was just like, dope. Like, so in some way, I think she's kind of been trained to at least look at stuff and trained to see the kinds of things, just because, you know, it was encouraged from a young age. So if anything, teach your kids some art history. They might grow up to be Beyonce is all I'm saying.
That's it. Good tip.
All right. So where do we want to start with the artwork in the video?
Lots of Daveeds.
Mm-hmm. Lots of Daveeds.
They were hanging out in the David room. And I was like, was that like easier to,
my instinct was because
such a big room
it's a huge room, lots of space, and we went to the Louvre last year first time, and my first thing with the Davids was like, shit, these are so massive. Much more imposing than I thought they were gonna
be. They are huge.
They're huge. And it gave me this whole new appreciation for David, but they're very imposing images, and they're very active, you know? There's a lot.
It makes you respect the fact that he didn't do that many paintings. Mm-hmm. Like, there's not a lot of Davids out there that you go see, but they must have taken a very long time.
Yeah.
Like, that could not have been easy. They're pretty much, I mean, if you've seen the video, they're pretty much life size.
Yes. They're huge. It's
maybe
insane.
Bigger than.
You could, like, live in one of David's paintings.
You definitely could.
You really could. You really could live in it.
Oh, that one is so beautiful.
Right?
Oh, my God.
So, at one point with the David's, you have Beyonce and her amazing dancers, and they're all, like, in a line, and they are
so
in
good.
Front of the consecration of the Emperor Napoleon and the coronation of Empress Josephine on December 2nd, 1804. Is that really the whole title of
that
painting?
I think that it is. Yes. I think that it is.
All right.
Descriptive.
Very historical.
Very historical. Any thoughts on exactly some of, like, what are your thoughts?
Yes, yes. Well, for one, I just think the way that the dancers were dressed and the way also that they color coordinated their outfits with different things. Like in this one, you know, everyone's wearing like basically flesh tone. I just think it's really, it's so good. And Beyonce's leggings and her like her bra top are a slightly different pattern than everyone else. And she's in the middle. So it's obvious that she's set apart. Mm-hmm. But we were talking about this earlier, like her placement being where the Empress is leaning about to get crowned is really significant. And just the way that like the David painting in particular, like it's really dark around all of the edges. And then there's this light that focuses on kind of the figures at the center, and it's this gold warm light, and then the light is like almost imitated with Beyonce and the dancers, where like the light focuses on most of them from like kind of the shoulder up, and the edges are a little bit darker. I don't know, just the way that it coordinates together seems really conscious to me.
The way the light and the color work together is definitely very intentional.
Right.
There was a really interesting reading, actually, of the use of this, and I want to find it. Hold, please. This came from professor and museum curator Theodore Barrow. This was his
what
reading,
a name.
Right? And he said, in discussing the coronation of Napoleon, that it's significant in this context because Napoleon created a meritocracy where hard work rather than birthright or aristocracy equaled success. Which very, you know, very much, I think, parallels to the message of this video and this idea of, like, you know, just working really hard to become the best and making your way that way. So I thought that was a very interesting parallel.
Yeah, that's smart iconography right there.
Coronation of Napoleon. And then which one do we want to talk about next?
There were a few Davids, right? So there was Coronation of Napoleon, Oath of the Horatii.
Horatii.
Which is an interesting one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm almost wondering if part of that is, I mean, because it has such like strong ties with the French Revolution, that maybe there was some kind of thought with that.
Yeah, in just terms revolution of, like, in general.
Political turmoil, revolutionary change.
Yeah.
Mayhaps.
I mean, I think that was a lot of the imagery. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Gender roles, too, in Oath of the Horatii is definitely a strong. Yeah, revolution and gender roles are kind of the lead.
Definitely.
Themes.
Can you elaborate on that a little bit? Just explain the gender roles in the image? Because I think you're right, definitely.
And we're about to talk about this one later, too.
Yeah. sure we're going to do a baby on Oath of the Horatii.
All right. So there are the three men on the left, which are about to go into battle. Mm-hmm. And isn't it that these are the three, like, they're like the
Horatii.
But they're also the brothers to the women in the photo. So the women on the right, who are kind of like looking really sad, these are their family members. Mm-hmm. But then one of the women, at least, is married to someone on the other side. Yeah.
Curation.
Latin.
Yes.
My Latin is non-existent, so please. Yeah, so it's kind of this like discord between nationalism and family and like how that plays out and like loyalties, I guess, is another strong theme in this. And it's set to ancient Roman times, correct?
Yes.
But it's painted during and to represent the French Revolution. So using an old Roman story to propel revolutionary
like that
ideas.
Concept of like sacrifice and country or political everyone has ideal to sacrifice over self.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
There is a detail of one of the Sabine women from Jacques-Louis David's intervention of the Sabines from 1799. So there are a few, and I really loved these moments. Just
the detail shots?
Yeah, just like as a directorial choice.
Oh, man.
Those
are beautiful. I just got goosebumps.
Those are so cool. The detail shots that they chose were fantastic.
Someone had a really good eye on that set.
Yeah.
Especially in the intro. Oh, God, where they're just like zooming out on like spots around like an eye or like hair or fabric. It's beautiful.
And it really added to the whole, this is, you know, appreciation and also study of art and art history and not just like look at this big important place we're in, like it really focused on these like very detailed images. Just from a purely like I enjoy music video standpoint, it was just a cool cool move.
Visually
I really liked
pleasing.
It pleasing. Yeah, definitely. And one of the details was of one of the Sabine women. The painting depicts when the Sabine men are interrupted by the Sabine women, who are now wives of Roman soldiers and mothers of Roman babies. It's a very emotional painting. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a lot of, it's a very intense I think it stirs a lot of feelings. I think it being, you know, intervention by women is a very powerful statement in this context. Yes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. So it's known, the incident's known as the rape of the Sabine women in Roman mythology, in which the men of Rome committed a mass abduction of the young women.
But the rape and the intervention are two different things.
They are different things.
Okay.
Because this idea of an intervention, I think, is already after.
Yeah, it's after the fact. Yeah. So it's like the aftermath of the rape of the Sabine women.
Yeah.
But that is an important thing to note, is that how this all gets started.
It was starting.
Rape and sack are kind of like interchanged because rape was probably definitely involved in that occurrence. Yeah, yeah. But it was, you think of like a sack, like they came in and they took these women, like it wasn't like an abduction. It wasn't like, I don't know, I feel like we could put our modern conception of the word rape onto it and can imagine a different scenario than how it played out in mythology. It was an abduction.
Totally. It was definitely an abduction.
In ancient Greece and ancient Rome, rape is used for that.
I mean, it's all the same thing. You're taking these women. So in more ways than one, but the idea is that they are taking them from their home, and then what follows is not pleasant either.
So, I mean, the whole idea behind the painting, it's set, it makes sense that it was painted in this like revolutionary era, because it's really pushing for this idea of people reuniting after the bloodshed of revolution and war. And so this moment in which this woman, who is apparently Romulus's wife, Hercilia, rushes between her husband and her father, placing her babies between them. So this sort of idea of love prevailing over conflict, which has everything to do with Jay-Z and Beyonce.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, I think you definitely nailed it there. The love winning out over conflict type thing. Yeah, the reconciliation.
So well thought out.
I know.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow. Amazing.
Yeah. So lots of good stuff from David in this video.
Love
him. What next? What do we want to talk about next?
There is the interesting sort of Pilates scene in front of the Nike, victory.
I just gotta say, at the moment at the end where Beyonce like loses her shit in front of Nike of San Jose, this is like the coolest thing I've ever seen in my
life.
Would
you say that she went ape shit?
Yes, I would. How many times can we put that joke into this episode?
It's been in there like a few times.
Yeah, so let's see how many we can get it in.
I'm trying to go many far.
Go for it. Go for it. But I love that moment. Like,
and again,
it's
with
so
like,
good.
Her outfit and the color coordination.
Yeah. And she has that, just this big blanket, billowing white. And she, she looks so badass. I love that moment so
much. I think
it's
really interesting in that scene, too, because obviously Nike is made from white marble, and the staircase there is very white and marble. And then you have dancers that are majority women of color in, like, these leotards that are their same skin tone. So you have, like, this very white space and art in like a very white material, and like, again, people that have not had nearly as much of a presence or point of access to that place, like being in that scene. And it's just interesting how they played with that kind of visual.
It's also really badass, once again, like just relating it to, you know, my own experiences in the Louvre. Like, when we were there, those staircases were covered in people. Like,
I know.
Like, everyone's trying to get the picture of the Nike of Samothrace. Yep. And it's just like, and when we were there, it was insanely hot. And it was just like all these people.
There was no air conditioning.
And it was just like, oh my God. And she has this space, you know, like this coveted space is hers. And that's just so cool.
I know. It was hard for us. You talk about the Louvre, you hear about how it's this amazing place, which it is, but it's hard to appreciate when it's full of tourists.
Yeah.
And it's hot. Yeah. So I, for one, appreciated getting the view of the Louvre in a sort of cool, forbidden sense.
Yeah, definitely.
And they
definitely
have shots. I mean, they're incorporated in the majority of the shots, and I prefer those, but it's interesting, too, because they definitely had, like, pans of different galleries where, like, no one was in there, and you get this view where it's, like, this VIP point of access where it's just like you and an entire gallery. That is my like literal dream to go into these places and be the only one. Right. There. So it's like, oh my God.
Right. And to not like, yeah, exactly. To go into these places and be the only one there and then to be able to make art out of that experience.
Yeah.
It just like, oh God, it makes me feel things. Like it's such a cool thing. Like it's such a cool thing to do.
Right.
To, interact with this space that way and to interact with these works that way. Mm-hmm. That it almost makes me, because obviously it probably cost some crazy amounts of money to do this and whatever, but like who else would ever get to do this? You know, there aren't a lot of artists that could ever have that.
The art history babes.
And it's like very short blips, but the fact that they're in the archives at certain points too. Mm-hmm. So it's like, not only are they inhabiting this space that's not really inhabited privately very often, but then they're also taking us behind the scenes into places that even if you do visit, you're not allowed to go to. Like, they're leaving no stone unturned, essentially.
Right.
Like, they own the Louvre in this video.
Yeah.
Like, they own it and they will go where they want to go.
And I'm buying it. And I think that the scene that really sold it to me as far as they own the Louvre right now is their American Gothic-esque moment in front of the Mona Lisa, which we couldn't get even close to the Mona Lisa when we went. And I took a really cool picture of the Mona Lisa with like an enormous crowd in front of it and everyone's phone out. And so
they have signs that are like, hold your purse, someone might try and steal your wallet while you're fucking ogling the Mona Lisa.
I would steal your wallet while you're ogling the Mona Lisa. Saying.
Yeah, and that too, the Mona Lisa, like that moment of them all done up and looking badass is a reference to a previous photo of the two of them.
Very iconic photo.
Yeah, it's a photo of the two of them. They look really cute in it, standing in front of the Mona Lisa, kind of like back to back a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like Beyonce's got like a cute little hat.
Pigtails, doesn't she?
Yeah,
she
she's in like pigtails. It's super adorable. And I think starting it and ending it that way was that initial statement, because that's just what the Mona Lisa really represents at this point. Yeah. It represents the height of culture for some reason. So I think that was kind of, it's their opening and their ending moment, because it's like, I mean, a lot of people aside from the Mona Lisa maybe wouldn't even know they were in the Louvre, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it was kind of
probably actually
exactly, so it's kind of their moment of being like, you know, this image, like and we're, you know, standing in front of it.
It's like situating them, kind of.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, I think that the Louvre, you know, the layman understands that the Louvre houses the Mona Lisa. Like, if you don't know art, you know that there's a Mona Lisa, and you know that it's in Paris, in the Louvre.
I don't know if everyone knows that.
I think a lot of people know that. I think I can say that with confidence.
I think a lot of people do, but even if they don't, the Mona Lisa on its own is like a situation, like, even if it doesn't put people in the Louvre, like, if they don't make that connection, they can at least be like, oh, that this is like the symbol of art.
Exactly.
You know,
Yeah.
But Nat, you had another work you wanted to talk about real quick.
Yeah, I wanted to show this one part. So for those of you who want to sit down and like actually look at the video and kind of follow where we're going, it's at 2:38. So 2 minutes and 38 seconds in. And it is a detail from a painting of a scene in Dante's Inferno where he visits a certain ring of hell. I forget exactly which ring, forgive me, where the adulterers reside. Pablo was Francesca's husband's brother. So she had an affair with her husband's brother, with her brother-in-law.
Scandal.
Yeah. Truly. And then they die. They're both in this circle of hell together for eternity. And in the video, they show this detail where Francesca is like clinging to the chest of Pablo. Mm-hmm. And then following that, we cut to this young couple where they kind of switch positions, where the woman is like at a higher vantage point and kind of holding the man to her chest and kind of taking over like a stronger role of power
in the posture.
Mm-hmm.
Adultery, gender roles. Take yeah. what you will.
Think oh, about yes. it.
Sit on that one for a second.
Put that in your pipe. And
yeah,
smoke it.
There's a really good article written in the Atlantic about this and the gender roles in the video and how it is. A lot of these moments, especially between this couple, the image for the single is an image of a woman doing a man's hair. Mm-hmm. And it's basically talking about how it's putting women in these powerful roles
yeah.
mm-hmm. That are also still like caretaker roles, mm-hmm. which is kind of an interesting, you know, it's like they're caretaker roles, but they're depicted in a powerful way.
It's kind of, it's the idea of like a matriarchy.
Yeah. yeah.
Is
yeah.
that
yeah.
women can be in control and powerful while still being nurturing yes. and
exactly.
caregivers. It's possible to have both.
Yeah. exactly.
It's kind of the ideal.
So it's really... Like, once again, that's kind of going back to what I said earlier. Like, this is Beyonce's video.
yeah.
Because there's...
It's her video.
There's so many moments of really pushing that, yeah, matriarchal idea.
Yeah.
In very subtle ways that I think are very brilliant.
Yeah. It's her video. Sorry, Jay-Z. We haven't forgotten about...
You had
give
that-
me that... Funk, that sweet, that nasty, that gushy stuff. What the hell was that video called?
No idea.
The video was called Misogyny 101.
But just to circle back to where we kind of started with the whole Beyonce and Jay-Z's relationship and them putting it out there and like what we make of that and how it makes us feel. If we're to take the personal out of it and just look at what they're setting up, it's kind of like this video in the gender role category in that department is showing a softer masculinity,
mm-hmm.
which is cool no matter what. Like, no matter, yeah. they take their personal situations out of it. The fact that the conclusion to this trilogy is so imbued with like mm-hmm. masculinity understood in a different way,
mm-hmm.
because so much of their marital strife comes from a culture of masculinity
yeah.
that is not great, that yeah. we don't like.
And exactly.
A lot of women are really over it.
Yes.
And I think a lot of men are starting to be over it. Because
oh,
in
yeah.
a way, it's a lot of pressure for men
yes.
to feel like they
Jesus.
Have to fit into this idea
yeah.
of masculinity that doesn't make you feel very good as a person.
Yeah.
Like
yeah. there was a really great, this is off topic, but another musician that I love and admire, James Blake, recently came out with a new album, and someone wrote, some Pitchfork bro wrote like a review of it and called it something like James Blake like releases another like sad boy album or something. And James Blake responded to it and he was like, I just really have problems with that term because it's suggesting that it's a problem for men to express their feelings.
Yeah.
And he very eloquently relates it to things like the suicide epidemic and
mm-hmm.
depression in males.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, it shouldn't be just looked down upon that a man talks about their feelings.
Yeah. It shouldn't be. And in the same way, we see so much like destruction in men going the other way. And like Terry Crews is a great example of someone who speaks out about the cult of masculinity and like in
mm-hmm.
athletics, especially in the NFL and the NBA.
And definitely in the hip hop community.
Yes. Right?
Yes.
Like, and it gets very complicated with African American men. And all
yeah.
of that and what's tied up in their identity. And
yeah.
it's a very complicated issue. And I just like that Jay-Z and Beyonce are tackling it just in general
yeah.
in such mm-hmm. a main stage way.
Yeah, I totally agree. Because, yeah, that's exactly what it was. These moments in the video are very tender both ways. But, yeah, the woman has kind of just a more powerful
mm-hmm.
stance. And the man has a little bit softer of
mm-hmm.
it. And it's just a simple thing. Like, it's that simple. But those aren't the images that we see of men and women often enough, you
yeah.
know?
And even the fact that they titled it The Carters versus, like, because it any other point in history, this would have been Beyonce featuring Jay-Z. Like, that's how it would have been written.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it would have been presented. That is
mm-hmm.
it. But that they are able to be like the Carters. But Beyonce's taking a little more of a
yeah,
yeah.
front and center role. But they're still going to present it as the Carters because it doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't need
exactly.
to be hers with him, like, assisting. It can be both of them and she can still have a stronger role.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's fine. And
definitely.
That's cool.
Definitely.
And that's a cool thing.
It's a good thing and a cool thing.
And is that a good time for a break?
I think that's a great time for a break.
We're going to break.
For a cool break.
We're going to take a break and then we're going to come back and we're going to talk about the Illuminati.
Ooh.
So, conspiracy theory time?
I think we're ready for that segment of our show.
Yeah. Let's dive into that weird fucking pool.
Yeah. So, if you are at all familiar with just how YouTube works and just how people can go on there and make their own channel and just put the craziest shit up, for a long time now, Beyonce, Jay-Z, Rockefeller Records has been accused of being in cahoots with the Illuminati.
Mm-hmm.
So what does this mean?
Well, I mean nothing, but like it doesn't mean anything, but a lot of people think it means a lot and it's really interesting and funny.
What was the term that guy used? Symbolization or something?
Symbology.
He said symbology.
Well, because that's a term from the Da Vinci Code. He's a symbologist in the Da Vinci Code.
The Da Vinci Code is not real.
But if you've read the Da Vinci Code if you've seen this video, it's probably no surprise to you that the Illuminati conspiracy theorists went nuts. Because, the Carters, Jay-Z, and Beyonce have been playing with this for a very long time. They've been very well aware.
They know what's up.
Oh, yeah. And they intentionally will now make references to the Illuminati.
So I feel like we're assuming that most of our listeners understand what we mean when we say the Illuminati. For those of you that don't, just real quick off Wikipedia, the Illuminati is a name given to several groups, both real and fictitious. Historically, the name usually refers to the Bavarian Illuminati, which was an Enlightenment era secret society founded on May 1st, 1776. The goal of this society is to oppose superstition, obscurantism, I don't know what that means, religious influence over public life, and abuses of state power. The Illuminati is kind of lumped in there with Freemasons, conspiracy theorists go crazy talking about how there's this idea of a new world order that's being masterminded by agents in government and corporations that are trying to gain political power that will establish this new world order. And it's just pervasive in every single part of any kind of culture that exists. So novels, films, television shows, comics, video games, music videos, etc. So for many years now, people like Beyonce and Jay-Z have been a very popular topic in this whole Illuminati conspiracy theorist dialogue. So some of the common symbols associated with the Illuminati is the pyramid with the all-seeing eye at the top. Any references to demons?
Well, that's the thing. At the heart of all this is a lot of the people that do buy into it tend to be people that have more fundamentalist, but Christian views, but also a penchant for conspiracy theories. Yeah. It's a very interesting group.
It's an interesting niche.
Because the Illuminati is also the devil.
Well, and the Illuminati, if they are real, are supposedly established to be against organized religion.
Yes. Yeah.
So
selling your soul to the devil, essentially.
It's the devil. I mean, there are endless videos on the Illuminati on the internet. You can find so much. And endless videos on just Beyonce and the Illuminati. You can find plenty. But basically, the underlying idea is people like Beyonce and Jay-Z are made a deal with the devil. Yeah. Basically,
and that's why they're so successful.
It goes much deeper than just a society that's against organized religion.
Yeah.
It goes to this place of they made pacts with demons.
And and they tie in their daughter to this. Yeah. And I'm sure they've tied in the twins somehow by now. And
twins, that's devil business.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, it's gotten pretty intense. And so if you are looking at the apeshit video, some of these suggested videos are
gonna
be
two queued up videos later. You will be at a conspiracy theory. So yeah. Just like go to the bathroom, pour yourself a drink.
Yeah, you don't even really need to look.
Make your bed and then come back, and it'll be on.
And we tried to watch one, and
intolerable.
I'm someone who likes conspiracy theories. Mm-hmm. I mean, not that I buy into them, but I find them interesting, and I tend to find conspiracy theorists interesting. Mm-hmm. I could not do it. Was impossible to watch. It's so misresearched, you know, no understanding of what was actually happening. And he even tried to look at artworks and had no idea what he was talking about.
Mm-hmm. No, he didn't. He was like, this is some weird symbology of the devil.
He said something about a child sacrifice.
Yeah. I was like, there is no child sacrifice happening in this painting.
Yeah, that was
and
the
if it is, it's biblical.
Ceiling, right?
Exactly. If there are children sacrifices, it's biblical. That's hello. Just a fact of the matter. So pick a side, pick a lane.
It's in the Bible, my guy.
No, know your shit. So there's so many videos, and yeah, at least the one we chose was impossible to watch. This guy was just...
We had to stop.
Yeah,
we were like,
it was
just too crazy.
Uncomfortable. And you should never go into the YouTube comments. We all know we should never go into the YouTube comments. But then you...
Repeat it after us, guys.
I started reading them.
It
and
was
people,
bad.
People
was
are so... just like talking about how they're like the devil and like... And it's just like, what is happening? Yeah. Like, how?
Part of it, too, when we were trying to watch one of those conspiracy videos, like, it was just very apparent that the real problem that the guy had with Beyonce and Jay-Z was that they were successful black people in America.
Yeah. He was definitely
very
racist.
Very strong undercurrent of racism.
Yeah.
So I highly doubt that a lot of these conspiracy theorists out there talking about this shit with Beyonce and Jay-Z are doing that shit with very wealthy white families.
I mean, they said it about the Clintons. Like, Clintons are part of the Illuminati and shit. Like, but
right.
That's
right. Certainly,
certainly they are. How deep it goes is pretty crazy. But I also am kind of mad because the thing that conspiracy theorists sometimes do well is sometimes a lot of their research is good. They're just good at arguing it a certain way.
Yeah.
But I feel like these Illuminati theorists, they don't even do good research,
They don't articulate it at all, because I agree. I can get into certain conspiracy theories, in at least to the extent that I am interested to hear what they have to say about it, if it's communicated in a clear and intelligent way. But for this, nothing I've seen is even remotely close.
And on top of it all, it's like no matter what you pull, there's a Beyonce lyric. Y'all haters corny with that Illuminati mess. They know,
they're
doing
making
this.
Fun of you.
They're doing this because they're
that
very,
wasn't clear enough.
Very well aware of what they are doing.
So there's something that I was thinking about, which is this idea that there's no way, according to these conspiracy theorists, that people like Beyonce and Jay-Z could just be doing this stuff because they just have creative ideas and they're making a lot of money and they're exploring what their artistic output can accomplish. Mm-hmm. It's almost like these people that claim that Beyonce and Jay-Z are in some kind of Illuminati Freemason conspiracy to somehow control the world's governments. It's implying that there is this idea of a new world order, that there are these puppet masters behind the scenes, mm-hmm. and that they are controlling people like Beyonce and Jay-Z to subliminally get across their message, which I think is kind of rude to just...
That's a great way to put it.
I think that it's rude to
just
assume
plain rude.
That these people aren't acting on their own creative agency.
It's very insulting.
They're being somehow... controlled by the powers that be.
Right.
That's so annoying.
It's so stupid.
Shut up.
Not to mention, Beyonce is a very, very open about her belief in God. Her Christian upbringing.
Yeah,
you're right. It's super rude. It's stripping them of who they are and what they actually believe and their creative agency and what they're capable of doing as human beings. Mm-hmm. You're saying. Yeah. no, it has to be part of some greater conspiracy where they sold their soul to the devil.
Yeah, there's no way that they're just acting on their own creative agency as artists. It's that there is a new world order that has weird rituals in the woods where they sacrifice stuff and have orgies and somehow control the world.
Yeah.
That's what's going on.
Yeah, it's crazy how much worldviews can differ. Like,
I know. And so, like, I don't know. I'm this isn't turning into an anti-Illuminati episode. I just wanted to say that that shit's dumb.
It's more like turning into an anti-angry people in their basements. Yeah, like, yeah.
Like
writing,
stop, dude.
Like ridiculous things.
At least if you're
perpetuating
ideas. If you're gonna do a conspiracy video, fucking research it.
Yeah, exactly.
Make sure you know your stuff.
Yeah.
Give a compelling argument. I'll listen. Like, yeah. But yeah.
I'm more likely to hear about the chemtrails.
Yeah.
I'm like, I, you know.
Dude, I've heard, like, and not that I buy into it, but I have heard really well-prepared flat earther arguments.
Right.
And at the end of the day, I'm like, I got respect for the fact that you at least put effort into that.
You really believe in this. Sure. You worked really hard. Your science is bogus.
Yeah, you're wrong, but
good job.
But like I'm just saying, if you're gonna go out into the world with a conspiracy theory, you should probably like prep that shit a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway.
But yeah, it's pretty absurd. I mean, if any of our listeners happen to believe in the Illuminati and you want to write in
a more compelling argument
and explain it to us, we'll listen. We are open-minded individuals.
Yeah. I'll definitely listen. I love that shit. I just know that a lot of it is like wacky.
Yeah.
And but that's not to say I don't want to know what you think.
Yeah.
Right. As long as it's not steeped in racism, we're
don't.
Open to hear
about
it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is what we were getting from a lot of these videos.
Exactly. Yeah. And if you're believing the Illuminati as any type of racist connotations, then please do not email us.
Yeah, we
ever.
Don't want to hear that.
Yeah.
You could probably stop listening to the show, honestly. Yeah.
Unsubscribe.
We are not the podcast for you.
No. Or keep listening and like be turned, because
that would be cool.
That would probably happen eventually.
I'd
if
be
you
happy.
Enjoy listening to us.
But yeah, so anyone has any fun takes on the Illuminati and the Carters, we'd like to hear your thoughts on that. It's been a pretty pervasive thing for a long time.
Yeah, it has been. I'm glad that we're talking about it, because that's something that I've noticed a bit with all of the Beyonce fervor. Is like, damn, apparently people are looking at her concerts and talking about how demonic the red light is in the concert.
Honestly.
Jay-Z's trying to get away from her demonic energy.
Because he can't control her. That's verbatim.
I was like, no.
That's screams.
Before we get into a little listener mail, any other takeaways, any other thoughts, feelings about Ape Shit?
If you're still here and you haven't watched it, go watch it. That's a thing.
Yeah, you're probably real confused if you haven't watched it. Go watch it. And I don't know. I feel like I've said this before. I'm just echoing myself at this point. But like, I'm not a big fan of Beyonce. I just think she's all right.
Mm-hmm.
It's not my cup of tea.
Mm-hmm.
But I am really excited to know that there are like artists out there that are
thinking like this,
keeping a dialogue with works from the past, and this idea of trying to reframe an institution like the Louvre, which for all intents and purposes is sort of a beacon to the like white European Western art history that we know to be the stereotype in the discipline. So it's really fun for us to see these sort of conventions flipped on their head. That's really cool.
Definitely.
And I want to see more of that. Whether it's music that I care for or not doesn't really matter, because I just think that as far as visual culture goes, it's really exciting.
Definitely.
And I, as both a Beyonce fan and a contemporary rap fan, think it's a banger. And then it's really exciting that it happens to overlap with something that I've dedicated my life to.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think it's just there's something in it for everyone.
Like, go watch it. You don't need to like Beyonce, just go check it out. It's a really interesting video, and you'll definitely walk away from it going, huh.
Yeah.
Huh.
And also, as we mentioned it briefly, but if this is something that interests you, once again, as a Beyonce fan or not, you can check out our Patreon episode at patreon.com/arthistorybabes, in which we pick apart her Coachella performance. There's some very similar things going on there with iconography. And also, if you have never seen Lemonade, I think all people need to see Lemonade. I think that's a really just historically important visual album. So there's a lot of good visual material, interesting visual material. Yeah, once again, whether you really like the music or not, I think you can pull something from what she does and what she's been doing. So, listener mail.
Let's do it.
This is a listener mail from Mary. The subject is undergrad and stressed! Exclamation point.
Oh, no, Mary.
Hey, babes. First, just want to thank you all for all the company you give me while driving, cleaning, and running. You make all of those things way more fun.
Yay.
I'm messaging you because this summer I was awarded a research grant from a university to research Modigliani and his series of female nudes. In a nutshell, I'm looking into Modi's, I like that, Modi's radical choice to include pubic and armpit hair in his nudes and the social implications of that in terms of gendered sexuality and representation. I'm about to enter my senior year of undergrad in the fall. I'm so freaked out, SOS, and I'm viewing this opportunity as a huge learning experience, not just about my topic of interest, but also what research is like and what my future as an art historian might look like. I had one of those honest and realistic, but I'm holding back tears kind of conversations with my professor, where he basically told me I can't write for Linda Nochlin because she's dead, and that my research won't interest anyone in grad school because the field has moved past some of the things I wrote about in my grant proposal.
Mm.
Basically, I'm dated. So, I'm feeling stressed. What I want to ask you about is, one, advice for an undergrad who doesn't yet know what I don't know. I have so much to learn and engage with, and I know that never stops, but how do I approach and acknowledge that in my research? How do I navigate writing about something I am no expert on, knowing that it will be a potential writing sample for grad schools? Two, what art news sources do you all keep up with to know what's going on in the art world and keep yourselves plugged into current conversations? Three, what scholars would you recommend looking into for some insight into current conversations about feminist and queer art history?
Holy wow.
Anything you have to share with me would be greatly appreciated. I think I need some perspective, to say the least. Also, can we talk about Beyonce and Jay-Z's video Ape Shit?
Yeah.
Holy shit, I'd love to hear your thoughts and analysis. Hey, girl. Well,
we did that one. We answered that question.
We
so
got,
that's
you,
one.
We got one of your questions taken care of. Also, I'm totally wearing an Art History Babe t-shirt to graduation.
Yay.
Next spring.
What? You better take a picture and send it to us.
Yeah, you really should.
Wow.
That's so
sweet. You know
sweet.
What? First off, baby girl. Your professor was wrong for that.
Yeah, I don't think that's the best way to go about that situation.
But here's what happens in any kind of university setting. You will run across professors that are your mentors that can say things that are going to really discourage you.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. so your yes. question then has to become, how much do I care about this? And if I care about it enough, am I then going to advocate for it? So
yes.
if what you are really, really interested in doing at a graduate level is something that this professor has somehow tried to dissuade you from or told you that you're dated, screw that professor.
Yeah.
That's basically it. Like, all of us, I think, went into our programs, well, maybe not all of us, but I think that a majority of us were like, I think I want to do this. And I know just from personal experience, I went into a program where none of the professors had any background in Mesoamerican yeah. mm-hmm. art yeah. or Mexican American art or yeah. Chicano art. And I said, oh, well,
yeah,
I'm going to do what I want to do because yeah. that's what I'm passionate about.
Right.
So you just go ahead and write what you're going to write for your writing sample and send off your application yeah. to a lot of different schools. you're probably going to get in somewhere and you're probably going to get a decent financial package.
I was
package.
Just going to say, the fact that you already have been awarded a research grant puts you...
Yeah, you're going to get
I
in.
I was not awarded any research grants in undergrad. Nothing. And I still got into grad school.
And also, my writing sample was nothing incredible.
No.
Like, it was fine. But, yeah. You know, like, it was not... earth-shattering research.
As we all learned at the end of our first year, none of our research or writing samples
mine
were.
Was appalling.
So I think just having a, you know, you obviously care a lot about this, you've done the research, and you have a good angle, I think that is plenty to get you into a grad program.
I think that a grad program would be excited to hear about Modigliani's nudes and pubic hair.
Yeah, I think so too.
And I think that you should take what your professor said as a grain of salt and keep going.
Yeah. And that's a lot of navigating academia.
Yeah. Yes. You got to trust your gut more than anything. Yeah. And
you can't let what professors say make or break your enthusiasm. We went
You lose your voice if you do that too much.
Yeah, definitely.
We were in a program with a girl who essentially just did what she thought her advisor wanted her to do. And it was sad to watch. And we were like, oh, no, you know. And it looked
it's
very...
It's a very common trap that people fall into. Writing for the professor. They write for the professor thinking that that's what they want to read versus...
Mm-hmm.
Finding their own voice, their own opinion, doing their own research. It's a crutch that's kind of easy to fall on. And it sounds like your instinct is to not lean on that crutch. So good for you.
Yeah,
and that's like run with that instinct.
Yeah. So the takeaway here is you got to do you, boo-boo.
Yeah. And I think the best thing to do with those kind of situations is, take what your professor said and be like, okay, so what are some new angles I could look at from this? But do not throw away the research you've been doing. And I would not look at that research that you're doing and say, oh, this is super dated.
Yeah, it sounds interesting.
And I guarantee you're going to find your own angle with it.
Yeah. There was a lady in our program, a class above us, who was doing something kind of similar, actually, with, like, female nudes and identity. And I think it kind of... pubic hair, I think, was, like, a big part of that.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was super interesting. We were all very into it when she presented on it. So, trust what you're doing.
Exactly. You will find your own angle. You will find your own voice. And it sounds super interesting. So I think he's probably... I don't know, maybe you caught him on a bad day or something, because that's something that happens too. Like, you catch professors the wrong day, and all of a sudden everything you're doing is terrible. you 100% cannot let that bring you down, because that, unfortunately, is something you'll deal with in grad school too.
Yeah.
And just have to believe strongly in what you're
doing.
As far as sources, like art news sources.
Hyperallergic.
Yeah.
Very good.
Mm-hmm. Hyperallergic's a good one.
I like ArtNet.
I do too.
Yeah.
ArtNet's pretty good. Yeah.
Artsy has some good stuff too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I
honestly really like following I follow a lot of contemporary artists and a lot of just weird art bloggers and stuff on social media and seeing the weird things that come out that way, that I feel like is kind of a more interesting, less art journalism, more like what's going on underground type stuff.
I love Jerry Saltz's Instagram.
Yeah.
I love that.
And he loves our Instagram.
Aww.
He's always got some good stuff to say. Yeah. That's my thing, is find the weird artists and art enthusiasts and critics that you like, and follow them on Instagram and Twitter.
Especially if you're already having discord with professors, it means that you're headed in that path anyway.
Yeah.
A lot of our people fuck art history, grad school, all that. No,
thank you.
Yeah, and you know what? They're all making a lot of money right now. Yeah. And I'm
more than a lot of art
what
historians.
Why didn't I do that?
It's a different time.
Thank you so much for your email. I think, did we get all of it?
There was one
more
question about what scholars you'd recommend for insight into current conversations about feminist and queer art history.
That one's hard.
That's a loaded one.
Yeah, I think I have to hand this one off. I really couldn't tell you.
Oh, like the ones I'm going to say are just the classics. Like, yeah, yeah. I want to go to like Linda Nochlin.
Who did you mention earlier?
Bell Hooks, uh-huh. Obviously super important feminist. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could rattle off all the classics, like basically, but in terms of super contemporary, once again, I would go to your Twitter feed.
Let's open like, it's it up such, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Like anyone who's listening right now who knows, like let us know and we will pass on the message.
Yeah,
like,
definitely.
You could always do a follow up too if other people are interested.
I would love to hear what our listeners suggest about this because I'm not ashamed to say that I haven't really been keeping up on the world of queer art history or scholarly work on like current feminist trends in the world of art history. I don't know.
Yeah, I just haven't been following many contemporary art historians at all.
Right,
like, that's just I'm detoxing.
I know from. We're
trying
all
to pay
just
off our student loans. And
I haven't even touched my student loans yet. Like, yeah, I'm just trying to survive right now.
Same.
Like, yeah, we're just trying to get by, and any of our energies kind of go into this podcast. Yeah. So, like, but I would say honestly, like, you're for super contemporary, like what's going on right now, like your Twitter feed is important. I know some people push back on that, but the discourse that goes on Twitter is absurd.
It is absurd.
Like, and it's really, like, really important conversations are being hashed out on Twitter every day. The way I've been keeping up is a lot of social media. It's like every time I see a new badass, like, feminist that has 50,000 Twitter followers, I'm like, I need to follow that person.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. So I think that it's kind of like chic almost to be like, oh, well, I don't take things like Twitter seriously. But the fact of the matter is, like, that is what our culture is now.
Yeah.
And a lot of our younger, more radical scholars are taking to Twitter
100%
to talk about the things that they are interested in, and so you're
100%.
You got to pay attention to where the content is coming from. So yeah, get on Twitter,
because it's so much harder to get published than it is to write a Twitter thread, you know. And it's like, you can get your ideas out there in like a digestible format, and then people can respond and you can have a conversation, you know.
And a lot of what's published is just like, it's censored because it's all built in a system that's based on power
and
like power dynamic and hierarchy. So it's like, yeah, it's better to kind of find the grassroots, the
don't gotta censor those tweets.
Yeah,
true.
Exactly. So it's a beauty and a curse, as we've seen.
So get on there, you know, check out hashtag queer art history.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, whatever it would be, and just see what's out there.
But also, yeah, like Nat was saying, I know we have a lot of lovely feminist and queer listeners out there that probably have some really good suggestions. Mm-hmm. So if you guys want to write in, we would love to do like a follow-up post or something.
Especially considering Twitter gets tricky when it comes to citations. So that might not be the best way, since you're still an undergrad. You're still worrying about research, and that is very much a part of your life. You do have to kind of stay in that zone.
That's about like citing a tweet, like how
I'm sure people are doing it.
Oh,
I think that it's in the Chicago manual style.
Nice, probably.
Nice. Yeah. So any suggestions, please write those into us. Mary, you're doing great, baby. You got this.
Great. You're doing so good.
Like, I also am not going to say where you go to college, just for like your own privacy, but we went to similar private liberal arts schools in the Pacific Northwest. So you're going to be fine, because like, I'm totally great.
She's great.
There you go. Enough said.
It's like, I'm totally great. No, you're doing great. Just keep staying the course. You got this, girl.
You're going to be fine. Don't worry.
Yeah. But yeah, obviously, stay in contact. Let us know how everything goes.
Please do. Yeah.
Thank you for listening. Thank you to everyone else for listening.
Thank you, friends. This was fun.
This was fun.
I enjoyed this.
It was really fun. It's really great.
It's pretty great. Check out our Patreon, patreon.com/arthistorybabes, for extra episodes for $1 a month.
Wow.
$1.
What a bargain.
Or more. If you want.
Or more. Like, we'll
if you so choose.
We will take more, but as low as $1 a month. So pretty good deal there. Hit us up on all the social medias. We're on YouTube. I've been screaming that at you guys for a while. We are on YouTube. Head over to YouTube. Subscribe to
Subscribe.
Please subscribe. And yeah, we'll see y'all next time.
Bye.
Ciao, amici.
Bye, babies.
The art history, babe.
Yeah.
The Art History Babes podcast is made possible by support from our lovely listeners via Patreon. Head over to patreon.com/arthistorybabes to help keep the Art History Babes going and for access to bonus content.